pudding people, to another episode of Everybody Loves Pudding. We are your hosts, Richard Geiger and Ken Seymour.
Woo! Feeling like a bad motor finger today, man.
I can tell. You've been running around in that Jesus Christ pose, and it's been throwing everybody off.
I tell you what, you know, going into work, coming home from work, we're just... Sometimes when you go into work, you're diving into the super unknown. And then when you get there, it's just like a bulldozer to get out. So that's kind of where we're at.
Whatever you say, coachies. So if you couldn't tell, we're going to have some fun in this episode. We are coming back to a top 10 list. We're coming back to our roots a little bit. Our very first episode that we did was about the late, great Chris Cornell and how much we love this gentleman's music. And we thought it might be good to go back again, but more specifically, just kind of highlight what we thought were some of his best work.
So when we decided to do, actually, you came up with the idea. I actually interpreted it slightly different. So Uh-oh. We said top 10 Chris Cornell songs, in a sense.
Right.
And that could simply be the songs that we think are the best. They sound the best. They have the best lyrics, the whatever. But I'll interpret that as a more broader thing. Now, that could be the ones that have the best sound. Those could be the ones where he sings or has the best vocals or the best lyrics. But I also want to throw in some Chris Cornell that maybe has the most impact. Because that could be a top song, and for me, how that impact fit everyone else, right?
Sure.
So, for the most part, it's the songs and the quality and the sound and the thing that drives that. But I wanted to broaden the horizons a bit on the selections and what those selections meant to me.
Well, I definitely went with just the ones that I like best, because I know there were several that's like, oh, that's a great song, and that was actually one of his more popular. Didn't make the list.
Yeah.
Because I just didn't like him as much as I liked others. But we'll talk a little bit as we go through this. We're going to talk a little bit about the time frame, the album that it was on, which band he was with at the time, just kind of why we chose that song. And part of the fun of this is going to be, I think, the dichotomy between our two lists, because we both love this guy, but probably in different ways, because our musical tastes are a little separate.
A little different, yep.
Yeah. So let's just kind of jump into it, both feet, and we're going to start. Let's let the bespectacled gentleman to my left start it off and go with his number 10 entry.
Okay. So bear with me on this entry here. I want to, let's give a little background because this is important. Soundgarden is an 80s band, right? Formed in the 80s, released their first albums in the 80s, and then kind of grew into popularity in the 90s grunge era. If you look at their album, and there's an interesting video that's out there that said these albums were all released within a couple months in 1991, and we're talking like
the killers,
all the amazing albums. And Soundgarden had one that came out in 1991 that was Bad Motor Finger, which is arguably my favorite one. But when we look at the popularity of our favorite genre of grunge music, the rest of the country's, the world's popular grunge music wasn't necessarily Soundgarden, right? It was Nirvana. It was maybe Pearl Jam, and Pearl Jam kind of grew more in popularity. Maybe even Stone Temple Pilots. It could be argued to an extent that maybe Soundgarden, of those bigger bands, was more on a lower tier, even though for us, they were top higher. Tier, yeah. Like top tier. So the number 10 thing that I have on my list is probably not even the top half of best songs on this album. It's probably maybe even in the lower thirds of songs on this particular album. But I chose this for a particular reason. So my number 10, I've got Black Hole Sun from Super Unknown. Now, why did I choose that one? To me, it's one of the most overplayed songs from that genre. You pick a list,
yeah,
that gets played.
Definitely.
Honestly, when it comes on, I skip it half the time because I've heard it so many times. Not because it's a bad song. There are definitely better songs on that album. Even their, quote, popular songs, Spoon Man's arguably better than that one. But that song is the one that got them the FaceTime, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's the song that got them into more people's brains, eyes, ears. That's the song that didn't put them on the map, but made the map larger for everyone to see. So that's kind of why I chose that one.
Yeah, when I was putting my list together, that he wrote so many songs, hundreds of songs.
Yeah.
And most of them were at least good. So narrowing the list was extraordinarily difficult. It's like, well, if I'm going to narrow this list, I can't just put good songs on here. I have to put great songs on here. So what were his great songs? My list is 36 long of great Chris Cornell songs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's 25 on my list. Probably would have been higher, again, if it wasn't overplayed as mm-hmm. much as it was. I used to like it a lot more than I did, but combining the play on the radio and it was on Rock Band or possibly Guitar Hero, one of the two, and it was just kind of everywhere you looked, and the video was great, very creepy
yep.
graphics to it and everything, and it's a more traditional kind of writing of a song, so that's what they needed. They needed that popular buy-in, and getting it down away from the screaming octaves into a more traditional kind of crossover. Definitely, yeah, I see where you're going on that. And I love that song. It was a good one for sure.
Yeah, and like I said, it's just, if anybody's heard and we tell them, oh, Soundgarden's my favorite band, and if you say Chris Cornell is the best vocalist of rock music, and they're like, well, who was that? That's the song that you can kind of say, like, do you know who that, you know that song?
Yeah, let's start here and we'll move forward.
Yeah.
See what you think about it. My top 10, or I should say my number 10, is actually, you were talking a little bit about Pearl Jam. Well, a lot of those bands, they're all friends,
mm-hmm.
and they had a very tight-knit relationship, and when something bad happened, it really hurt them all. And there was a tribute album that was done between members of Pearl Jam and Soundgarden together called Temple of the Dog.
And they weren't even Pearl Jam yet.
No. But they were still all friends, and so for me, Say Hello to Heaven off of that track, just the blend of vocals, this is one of those instances when you let the vocalist just off the chain to get into those higher octaves and just kind of not just get to the higher octaves, but do it with emotion, and just the whole orchestration was just so beautiful, that song. And it had the meaning on top of it. And it's just, man, I love that song.
And it's such a mellow, emotional song.
Mm-hmm.
And when we look at a lot of these songs, I'll reiterate it through most of them too. He's, you know, we're biased. Arguably one of the, if not the best rock, grunge vocalist period,
right?
And this is the group of artists in here still growing up, let's call it. So this is a young fresh, vibrant voice that hasn't quite fully matured, let's call it, but you see it almost at its peak in this song.
Yeah, you're not kidding about that. And who, I mean, if you know anything about Chris Cornell and you know anything about Eddie Vedder, who wouldn't want harmony between those two? I mean, just seriously, this is that was just the one album, but that album was amazing. And that is my favorite song off of that album.
Yeah, I had it on my grander list of more than 10. You know, the interesting thing about that one is right now, and when Soundgarden kind of went on a hiatus and Chris Cornell went with Audioslave, where did Matt Cameron go? He went to Pearl Jam. And he still is the drummer for Pearl Jam. So that just kind of shows you the type of relationship that these folks had.
Yeah, and oh, speaking of, talking about the whole reason that that band was together, the death of the lead singer of Mother Love Bone. If you've never listened to Mother Love Bone, you are seriously missing out. That was a very short-lived band, but the stuff that they put out was surprisingly good.
And it's still that like late 80s, early 90s. It's the mesh. It's the turning into grunge, but it's still got the hints of that 80s hairband stuff. But mm-hmm. like, this is the evolution of it. You're coming off the end of all of that stuff with a lot of these bands, and you're creating a whole new era of music.
If Wood would have lived longer, he would have been like the third part of the triumvirate of vocalists, because I could already hear it and the stuff that says, like, oh, he's going to be amazing.
He's good.
Yeah. All right. Number nine.
Okay. Well, why don't we go to a song that has maybe more impact for me, maybe other people too, and is, you know what, strangely related to that. So I picked a song, and Chris Cornell has a couple of, there's a Chris Cornell song, there's a Soundgarden song on the single soundtrack. The single soundtrack is one of those things, besides having like generic Columbia House and like, let's look through these things. I want that CD, that CD, that CD. The single soundtrack introduced me to a lot of these bands, and Soundgarden was one of those. And the song on there is Birth Ritual. And that song has that same, you get more of that, you're screaming, right? But like in the correct way.
Right.
You hear that voice, and you hear that kind of grungy, not quite metal, like riffy sound from that song as well. And then the season song that's on there is fantastic as well. Actually, that whole album is just
amazing. It's an
introduction to all of the best from the era.
Yeah.
I think that soundtrack and maybe the Crow soundtrack had that kind of pointed me in a lot of directions for different bands. So I had to pull something off of that, because there's a strong chance that if I hadn't listened to that song on that album, that I might not have gravitated towards Soundgarden.
Well, the funny thing is that movie was okay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it wasn't bad. It's not one of those movies for most people that are just going to stick with you. However, the scene that particular song was in, if you're going to have an emotional gut punch scene, that's it. Because that happened right after the pregnancy was terminated.
Mm-hmm.
And he's lost. And he's in the club by himself. And that song's playing in the background. It's like, oh.
It's an interesting, I mean, that thing is kind of that music scene, right? Like, that's kind of that idea, with more of the Hollywood storyline stuff to it. But you had elements of the band members showing up in there too. It's just more of the Pearl Jam people, I guess. But it's just an interesting time. And the fact that they had these albums and that movie that kind of all related to this, and looking back on it now, it's just like, it was an amazing transition in music, if that was your music type, that is.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And if you missed that movie, that's okay. Just listen to the soundtrack.
Yes, soundtrack's great.
All right, my number nine. You said you kind of missed some of the solo stuff, so we're gonna get our first track off of his first solo album, Euphoria Morning. I love this song. It's one of the reasons that I love it is it is not in the style of anything else that he released. So, I mean, we've had the hard rockin' Soundgarden sound. We've had the kind of cooled down sound of it, the normal, you know, just this kind of range. But when he went solo, it let him be a little more experimental. And this song is straight up blues. And it's called When I'm Down. And I just, oh man, it's If you know anything about Chris Cornell, so the first thing I'm going to describe the song with is piano.
Well, that makes sense.
Right? It's like not what you listen to in any of his other music. But it's just seriously like standard piano, a little bit of other stuff, but just that and voice and blues, and it is gorgeous.
Well, one of the things that I noticed in kind of revisiting everything, and I'd always thought about this before, when you listen to CDs, because yes, children, we did listen to CDs, compact discs, there were always, I always felt, a certain set of tracks.
Mm-hmm.
Nine and or ten were always these like grouping of ones that were, you had the start, the middle, and then that kind of picked up towards the end with nines and tens. But the one thing I noticed with Soundgarden, with like all of these things that Chris Cornell is in, if you look at the albums, song number one really kind of sets the tone for the whole album.
Yeah,
it is just, it's the theme across definitely all the Soundgarden albums, Audioslave, and you said that particular one right there. So he's got a keen eye for organization, keen ear for organization when it comes to tracks on an album.
Yes, that is 100% true. And I will suggest to you, if you haven't heard that song, that's one of the first ones you should listen to, and it will make you do the Scooby-Doo. Because it's definitely different.
Yeah, I have on the list because I am familiar with the song, the Can't Change Me song.
Right, that's on that one.
That's the quote popular one off of that album.
Right.
But that's a really good song. So it's just, Soundgarden has, three albums that people listen to all the time.
Yeah.
But there were two albums before those three, and actually there's one later on after that one too. And sometimes you just miss those things. And the Ultra Mega OK that came out in the late 80s is a really, really good album.
I got that from my cousin.
And I didn't even really know about it, but I didn't even really ever listen to it until like the last couple of years. So
yeah, he collects vinyl, and it's like, oh, this is perfect for vinyl for you. You've got to have this.
Yeah, they had a re-release of it here recently, and that's the only reason it even popped up for me to notice. So there's good songs on it.
All right, on to number eight.
Okay, so I have from Super Unknown again, Fell on Black Days.
Oh, it's... I was wondering if any of ours were going to cross over in the top 10. You've already crossed over. This is my top 10 too.
So we both know that this is a good song. Why is it a good song? Well, I think there's that there's a little bit of a theme in some of the songs where when people play music and songs and drum beats and artists sing and they combine them, there's this flow. But I feel like in some of these songs, there is this continuity in beats with the songs that he creates and how he sings them, and his voice and his tone just matches the music really well. And in this song, you get that continuity, but then you get like that real heartfelt, just...
It's somber.
It's just a really like mellow but strong song, mm-hmm, at the same time.
Oh, yeah. With that guitar riff that repeats and kind of starts in the mid and goes down and allows him to have those long notes over there and just hold it, but hold it clear instead of the little more hoarse stuff that is. It just reminds you, it's like, oh yeah, this guy is trained. he's got range.
Very good range. And that song really kind of goes all of the ranges. Like he goes like the high loud, but then he goes higher without it being like high pitched, right? But more just loud but not distorted. You know, it's just how he does it. I mean, who knows? But a lot of the songs that are the best songs really just show his vocal range that he can go through without making it be over the top.
And then if you get a chance on this song specifically, read the lyrics. It if you stay dry-eyed, then I question your humanity just a little bit.
No, I can say I could pull out the liner notes on my CD.
Right.
That was a thing. But I know in even like Apple Music, you can click on a button and it just shows all the lyrics for every song.
It's kind of funny. It wasn't too far off. That was my number 7.
Woo!
So we'll go to my number 8. We're going to stray into his other large band for the first time, that being Audioslave, the blending of two just fantastic bands together, and two bands that should not work together. You would think, it's like I looked at it, it's like Rage Against the Machine and Soundgarden. I don't know. Beautiful.
Yeah. When you're good, you're good.
Yeah. So there's no doubt about that. And it's another one where he gets to really kind of get some clarity and give a chance to belt out some long notes. And I'm going with I Am the Highway.
I like that song. I had that one. I think Cochise is another one. The number one song off the album, right?
Yep.
That really gets the juices flowing on that album. And another one too. So of all the things, you know, I regret not having the ability to have ever seen Soundgarden live, but I was able to see Audioslave live. So I can, and it was when they were touring for that particular album.
Very similar. I did not get to see Soundgarden, but I saw Chris Cornell live when he was promoting his first single album. I was front row center.
Ooh.
It's one of the best experiences I've had in front of a very enthusiastic keyboardist.
Well, you said piano.
Right. Yeah. Gotta have it. But I love that song. All right. So we know my number 7. So let's go on to your number 7. Don't you spoil the rest of my list.
So it's just from Audioslave as well. That same album. I have Shadow of the Sun.
Let's see, Shadow of the Sun. Not on my top 10. That one get 21 for me.
Okay. Once again, that kind of guttural screaming that you get out of that, but not the whole time.
Oh, but that bass line, man. Oh.
And when you talk about a lot of these albums, Soundgarden and Audioslave, the people who are playing the guitars, I think, get a lot of the attention. We did our top guitarists before, and, you know, Tom Morello was in our list. Kim Thayil was, if I just saw right, elected to the Asian American Hall of Fame this past weekend. But we don't see a lot of maybe things for, like, Ben Shepherd, or we don't see things for Tom Comerford, but if you listen to any Rage at all, you know the bass lines are an integral part of those songs.
They're nasty.
And he's just got a nice, smooth, it seems, when you watch people who play the bass guitar and they're good, it just seems natural. But for him, it just seems the quote, rock bass in a certain sense, it just seems natural to him. Like, he just gets it. He knows how to combine all the good beats with everything.
Yeah, I like any song where you're going to have the that guttural singing where you let it trail off over nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, oh, this is a little chills, you know, that sort of thing. All right, we're going to flip things around. Since you took my 7, I'm going to go to 6.
Okay.
Number 6, off of your favorite album, Bad Motorfinger.
Yeah.
I have to say that Outshined is my number 6 because, again, going back to the bass, that dun, 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 it's just, you can groove to it. If you would have put that produced by, I don't know, Timberland, it could have made a $1 billion worldwide hip hop. Is that kind of very, very infecting kind of groove. And the fact that I love complexity in a song, and so you've got this infective basic groove, but then you've got a complete complete change of pace, like three quarters through the song, mm-hmm. to be completely different and equally awesome before it goes back into gear. It's like, good Lord, it's good.
Well, in that particular song, too, I mentioned how they do like vocals that match the music and line up with the music. And that sounds cheesy, but when you hear it, it's, if you're good at it, it's just an amazing kind of effect, if you will. And that song is like the tip top kind of epitome of that with the band. And it's like 2 minutes in and you can hear it. As he sings the song, the music plays with it. It's just like a perfect match and a perfect match with a perfect tone to match. It's just an amazing song.
Yeah, that's killer. All right, number six for Ricardo.
So when is it? I have a couple songs from this album. I have Blow Up the Outside World from Down on the Upside. That album, I think the first two that we talk like Bad Motor Finger, Super Unknown, get all of the attention, where that one gets under-attentioned. I just made that up.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think a perfect example of that album and the songs that are quality on it, Soundgarden had the opportunity one day to be on Saturday Night Live with Mr. Ace Ventura himself.
Jim Carrey, wow.
It was a great, I mean, that's me. That's right on my alley. Like, right. Oh my gosh, like one of my favorite actors at the time of all time, with the comedy and his nonsense, and my favorite band. I was like, this is great. And what did they play? They played two songs from Down on the Upside. So like, it's perfect. Is the entire album great, perfect? No, but the first two-thirds are...
Okay, so this is where I always get into it. So I think this is the reason that people love Bad Motor Finger and Super Unknown better, because while there is a certain shared theme to a certain extent, each song is an entity on its own. Mm-hmm. That is not the case with Down on the Upside. Down on the Upside is meant to be played from one to the end in a row. It is like watching a play.
Yeah, you can't skip.
No.
If you're just going to go right to nine, like remember I said nines and tens, I love those.
Right.
You can't do that on this album.
No.
You have to go through the whole emotional ride and start with one and just ride it out through the whole thing. It just has some really powerful songs. And I feel like we've talked about this before with Stone Temple Pilots, for example. We think of grunge or grungy things as like grr and burr, you know. But when you don't have that and the music is excellent and it's got that emotional, almost like a depression feel to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what this album is. It's just a slight tone down to an extent. When you listen to Stone Temple Pilots and you're like, dead and bloated, you know, like just a grungy rock thing. But just listen to all of their other albums, and they're not like that at all.
No.
And that's what makes those bands awesome, right? And that's what makes Soundgarden awesome. Like, this album just has that. It's just a different tone, but with the same guitar and the same vocals. It's like they didn't reinvent themselves.
No.
They just... So grew up. I don't know what to call
it. It's a little muted compared to their other stuff, and it's just got, like I said, I felt like they're trying to tell a story, and not like a story in the sense of reading a book or watching a movie, but they're trying to get you to feel something specific. And I felt that whenever I listened to it, that's what I always felt like. It's like, oh, it's like my own personal theme music as I'm going through the course of the day, and you know, the little peaks of optimism followed by just bouts of depression and uncertainty and just eeriness.
And this has that. It has the effects that you get from the vocals, And then this, there's bits of that element of the vocals matching the song, right? Like matching the tone, matching the rhythm of it. Like you just listen to it towards it, blow up the out. Like it's just the way he can do it in the loud yelling rock voice, but he's not yelling. He just has that voice. It's
yeah,
I don't know. It's crazy. It's a really good song.
It's crazy. It's kind of funny. My number five is the only one in my top 10 off of that album.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I've got to go with Burden in My Hand.
That's a good one.
Maybe the most popular off of that.
There's a couple
album,
of them. Yep.
But normally I don't go with the most popular in a given album, but that one had not only just stupendous lyrics to it that everyone could sing along to, which is a rarity in a lot of these bands. We're exceptions. I mean, if you're a big fan of whatever type of music, you're going to follow the lyrics to the songs that you like. But I'm just saying that the layperson that just hears it for the first time is going to be an earworm, and those words are going to stick with you. And it was able to not only have the heavy feel, but the light feel in the same song.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like, it was an invitation. That was the one that was on that album. That's an invitation saying, okay, are you ready? Come with us for a ride.
It just has, I don't know, like it's just so smooth. I don't know how else to describe that song. It's just smooth. It's very good. I don't know. The more I listen to that album, I've always liked that album. It's always held a soft spot in my heart. But the more I listen to it, the better the album gets. And I always liked it. So for it to go from a to like elevate above that, it's just, you don't often get that for something that's, you know, 25 years old, longer than that. So it's a really good album.
Out in the open sunshine says mine.
Yeah,
a little bit of optimism.
Mm-hmm. Happy times.
All right, what is your number five, sir?
The Day I Tried to Live from Super Unknown.
That just missed my top 10.
It's a good one. I like it.
Oh yeah.
With Super Unknown, I think for me, because I had liked Bad Motor Finger so much that I was really super excited about that album.
Yeah.
And I didn't care about any of the popular songs. That wasn't it. I was just super excited about having another album from the band that I really liked at the time that, for me, because of the availability for things, I only got to listen to one album. So I was really excited about having another one.
Yeah.
And this is this is over an hour long. There's a lot of music on this album. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of more, it's, if I can say, more refined songs on this, where Bad Motor Finger is just grungy and hits hard for a lot of those, and there's a lot faster paced. This one just has more clean vibes to it,
a little more polish,
and there's just a lot to say about the vocals in all of these songs. I mean, that's why we're talking about it. But it, I don't know, like he just sings really well in this song. That's what I think.
Well, and there are all sorts of songs about finding love and losing love and all this other stuff. And a lot of times there are fewer songs about failing and what it feels like to fail in general.
Yep. And that's okay.
Yeah. I just does like a little painful, but yeah, this is good. So, all right, let's stay on Super Unknown.
Let's go
to a number four for me. This just delivered, Mailman.
Yes, Mailman. I think I listened to that just earlier today. Yeah.
Now, this is one of my favorites because if I say Mailman, even to fans of like Soundgarden and Chris Cornell, a lot of them are going to go, wait, which one is that one?
Well, it's towards the tail end of the album.
Yeah.
And I know people's attention spans, right? If you had it and you listened to things, you tended to listen to the front end of the album, maybe the middle. But if you were on a trip and your trip was 30 minutes long and you listened to the first 30 minutes of the album, then the last you didn't listen to. Now, if that CD was in your car, then maybe it picked up where you left off. But a lot of times that wasn't the case.
Right.
So you started from scratch again. So then you just listen to things and maybe you advance to a different track or something.
But if you want something that's just deep and rich, I mean, just kind of feels like it's scraping the bottom of the musical tones, and it's almost like a sludge, this song, in some ways, the way it progresses. And that sounds like it would be awful, but the way it's presented, the whole point, again, it's trying to evoke a very specific emotion, and it just does such a phenomenal job of doing it.
We like the Mailman. He delivers us good stuff.
Well, yeah.
Really, but
I was going to say that.
Usually bills, but sometimes there's packages, you know.
Well, sometimes it's like, oh, I could win this sweepstakes. Oh, okay, sure.
Well, back in the 90s, the Mailman would deliver the good stuff.
Yeah, or a basketball.
Your Columbia House packages or your BMG packages. Those usually come by the mail.
What, wasn't there a basketball player that was nicknamed the Mailman?
Karl Malone. He's not. Let's avoid Karl Malone. Great basketball player. Maybe less great of a adult male. Maybe. We'll just leave it at that.
Okay, so he's not delivering anything good. All right, good to know. All right, on to number four for Richard.
We may notice a trend. Okay, anyway, the next one is off of Bad Motor Finger. I have Room 1,000 Years Wide.
Oh, that's such a fun one.
Now, this one does have some quirkiness to it. If you listen to... Maybe more people recently have heard Audioslave compared to maybe some of the earlier Soundgarden. And there's the song on the first Audioslave album towards the end where he's like, he does vocal stuff, but how he does the vocal stuff is he's singing the song, but he hits his throat to create the sound. And it's awkward.
A little bit.
And I feel like in the end of this song, you hear like what appears to be a trumpet. It's not a trumpet. It's him like making squeaky noises with his mouth. I think that's what it is.
This is a pig.
Well, there's that song too.
wrong squeaky noises.
But this just has that kind of bassy, rhythmic type sound. And he's just got the low singing voice throughout a good portion of this. And then it just kind of picks up louder and more vibrant towards the end of the song.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that was a fun one. I always liked that one. All right. We're getting towards the end. And, of course, we'll do some honorable mentions before we do our number one picks. Mm-hmm. Number three, going back to Audioslave. I tend to favor songs where he really gets to just belt them out. And off of the first album, you've got Getaway Car.
Getaway Car, yes.
I mean, just if you want one, and again, a song that you can sing along to, that's it.
And that first album has a lot of those songs.
Yes, it does.
So when you talked about before, like those two things don't go well together. It's just amazing how absolutely they went together. And I think part of that had to be compromised on both ends.
Mm-hmm.
You just got different types of music. But I also think that when it came to these artists, that they also had the intention of making this type of music. But the bands that they were in didn't allow them to make this type of music.
Right.
So then getting together was just a natural fit.
Makes sense to me. All right. Number three, Richard.
Okay. So we already mentioned Temple of the Dog. I'm going to go with just like the cheesy one off of this. And I chose Hunger Strike. And now the reason that I chose Hunger Strike off of this, the lyrics are very repetitive. The song's very basic. But to me, every time I hear this song, it gives me the chills.
Oh, yeah.
So the fact that Eddie Vedder just came in and it's like, I can sing. And I'm like... that was it. Like this is the first thing that he performed, right? So as much as this is a Chris Cornell Hunger, like Temple of the Dog thing, this is an introduction to Eddie Vedder. And as much as we want to admit how much we love Soundgarden and we love Stone Temple Pilots and we love Nirvana, how many of those bands are still together right now? None of them. You know, unfortunately,
there are reasons.
There are reasons. Alice in Chains, none of them are together. But what's the one band that's still together and going strong? It's Pearl Jam. And this was kind of how that band formed. But which is important to a lot of things. Which is important to the grunge era. It's important to the friendship of the bands that were performing in this. It's important to the longevity of this type of music. But the song itself has a message. It has great vocals where the two pair together almost effortlessly, and you still see the range delivered from Chris Cornell in this song as well.
Yeah, no kidding about that. You get to see the differences. You get to see them complement each other. It's a beautiful song. I had that still hit my top 36 or so. It's 27, so yes. Hard not to.
I weighted this one more on the importance of the song.
Oh, yeah.
More so than the performance, although the performance is still top-notch. It's a combination of the things.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. All right. Penultimate number. We're going back to Super Unknown. Because, you know, we've talked before about albums that are essentially perfect, and to me, Super Unknown is one of those albums that is basically perfect. You could pick almost any song except for the one about the dog, and even that's still a lot of fun. But yeah. So I got to go with 4th of July. It was always one of my favorites for a couple of reasons. You know, 4th of July, it's like, oh, patriotism. That's what everybody's going to think. It's like, has nothing to do with it. And such fun imagery. Well, maybe not fun, but very vibrant imagery. And again, it lets him just sing at multiple levels and for the long notes. And it's, you could call it droning, but droning in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if I hear this song, it will be stuck in my head for at least a week. Every time.
Yeah, it's stuck in my head because I've listened to it recently.
Yeah.
And you're right. When he's got those long notes, I wonder about the recording process because you hear two notes
right
going on. So obviously he had to record himself at two different times to match the levels that he was trying to deliver with one nice steady low and then like
and then the yeah, higher yeah. Kind of because so you get both Chris Cornell's in one song. It's like yes.
Yep. And it's just when you hear the intro to it, it's just kind of like it's like that off tone kind of just like chirping of the guitar, and then it just picks up after that.
Yeah, I love that song.
It's a very good song. Very good song. What was number two? I kind of messed up when I made my list. Anyway.
Number two.
So I said, I have a theme here because I really like the songs off of Bad Motor Finger. And I'll go back to one of the things that I had indicated before about the number one song. So I have Rusty Cage on here. And it's so good that the Man in Black even covered it.
Right.
So when you hear when you hear this song, if you hadn't heard this album before, and you put the CD, because we're still talking CDs, you're not going to go to like a digital media. You're going to put the CD in. It's going to start spinning up, and you just hear this intro of the single guitar, and then like the echoey sound, and then all of a sudden, it just picks up, and it hits hard. There's a lot of rhythm, and then towards the end, it switches. And it's that more slowed down, thundery, grungy type song with just belting vocals in it.
Oh, yeah.
It's a real good introduction to a real good album.
My dog's eyes and my headlights. I can't do a Man in Black impersonation, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's... And he did a great version of that song, too.
This was fun.
It's obviously a complete opposite of
right.
this performance in here, but
you could tell he understood it.
Oh yeah.
He got it, and it's hard not to love the way, because it goes from like what everyone thinks of in terms of grunge in the beginning
mm-hmm.
to just this almost Led Zeppelin rock anthem interplay, and it's just like, oh man. And then they just switch it right back, and it's like, I love these guys.
Yeah, the way they can change the tones within the songs, within the albums. I wonder how the practice sessions went, or the creativity sessions went when constructing these things. They had the songs that went a certain way, and someone's brain is like, why don't we do this in this section and change it up? And the band member's like, yeah, I like that idea. And everybody just like, they sure. got it, yeah. right?
And this is actually the song that made me love this band in the first place. That's when I heard Rusty Cage. It's like, okay, you got me. Whatever you make, I'm going to listen to going forward.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. So this is time for honorable mentions. I know I had quite a few. Like I said, I had a list of 36. I'm not going to mention all of them, obviously. But there were a couple that I really wanted in the top 10 that I couldn't quite find a reason to get it there. Not because they're bad songs, because these are actually still, to me, the cream of the crop.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, I like the top 10 so much better. But like, I wanted his cover of Billie Jean in the top 10 somehow. But I can't quite do it.
He's done a couple covers that are pretty solid.
Yeah, yeah. He did a Beatles cover, Come Together, that was killer.
I think I've heard that once. By accident, and I was like, I had to do a double take because I heard it, and I was like, I know that voice. I do. Why would I not know that voice?
That's one of the three of my favorite covers. The Prince cover that he did was also just amazing. It's just, yeah. What about you?
So for sure, we've talked about Down on the Upside, and I've got Pretty Noose and Rhinosaur off of those.
Right.
Another number one song, right? I wanted to mention a couple sneaky ones. So if you think about it, what do we talk about all the time? Comic books.
Yeah, I was going to say comic books. Right.
So they actually had like the theme song from the first Avengers movie. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And the band had been on hiatus. They did their own thing. They got back together and kind of did a smaller album, but they had the theme song from the Avengers movie. And it's a fun song. Is it one of the best songs? No, but it was great to hear new versions of our favorite band.
Right.
And to have it be on one of the things that we love the most, that's actually, that's pretty cool.
It is very cool.
What is that one called? Live to Rise.
Right.
So I wanted to mention that.
Well, he got 007 too, man. I mean, he got when they redid the Daniel Craig iteration, he got the theme song, Know My Name.
100% right.
And it was a killer song too. I mean, just really, really good. So, yeah. If you haven't heard it, there is a really nice... album called King Animal. Tari the song off that, pretty solid. It's just things like that. All right. So anyway, let's get to it. Let's find out what our favorites are. Richard, your number one Chris Cornell song.
I held my breath because you already mentioned it. It's Outshined.
Oh. Sorry.
Yes. That when we I mentioned chills from hearing a song, that's the one that gets me the most excited. That's the one that gets me the chills every single time. That's the one that I love singing very poorly, but as loud as I can.
Right.
Outshine to me is just like the epitome of the band, whether you want to go up or down in terms of sound and pace or whatever. To me, that is the song that will always be the Soundgarden song for me. And I it was an obvious number one choice for me.
Yeah, I had to I kind of cheated a little bit on my number one.
Oh, did you do a 1A and 1B?
Yeah, I had a tie because, you actually kind of touched on it a little earlier, the season soundtrack, or not season soundtrack, but the singles soundtrack with Seasons. That's always been one of my favorite songs of his. It, like, for the first 20 or 30 times I heard it, I would get tears in my eyes. Because it did such a good job evoking sadness out of the listener, and it's so raw, and it's just him and a guitar, and it's just man, it's good. But also, Super Unknown, man, Like Suicide, again, just
you like all the sad ones, huh?
I like the tearjerkers just a little bit.
Yeah. Another good one, too. And, you know, you have to talk about other elements of these songs where you have, I feel like the drums have an important play in that particular song. And it's that same kind of mellow, you know.
It's the toms, man.
Yeah. It just... It's a complete sound, and as you know, if you're a Metallica fan, you have a hate for toms, and I get it, right? You should. But this one, if you're good at that creation process, you know when to use those elements, right? And you know, Matt Cameron's just a really good rock drummer. So
no two ways about it.
Yeah, that's a really good song.
And the reverb. That also would always get me.
And you still get that still that same kind of low, let's call it the sultry voice, but that scream, right?
Right.
So to be able to move effortlessly between the two is just, I think, one of the things that we love about him in general.
Yeah, and you're talking about singing badly along with stuff, because, yeah, I'm definitely the vehicular singer. When I'm listening to things, and that was like I'm on it. The original Like Suicide, not the one that he redid again with Audioslave. I'm talking about the original version. Mm-hmm. So I'm singing along in the same octave as him, and I'm doing perfect, and everything is great. And then he goes into the second verse, and I can't follow him everywhere. And it's just so, it's like, oh, I hate that, but I love it. It's so good.
Yeah, it's... I feel like when you... You've seen it on movies before where you get into a mood, and a lot of times it's presented as depression, and the person just sits in their room and they just listen to like The Cure or whatever all the time. this isn't the depression mode.
No.
It could be, I suppose, but I feel like you don't listen to the Soundgarden songs for a while and then you come back to them.
Right.
And you're just like, these are so amazing. These albums are so good. And you just get hooked for a couple weeks and you just listen to them on repeat. And then for some other reason, something else draws your interest and then it disappears for a while.
Right.
It's like these are treasures that just, they just stick in your brain and you can never really ever get enough of the albums in general, but the songs for sure just kind of hit different.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, what did you think, folks? Are these some of your favorite songs? Did we leave out something? As always, you can let us know on any of our social media platforms. We would love to hear it. We would love to hear anything. I'm not certain anybody's listening at this point. I would make a wager I could start talking about cornflakes, and nobody will hear it.
In fact, Kellogg's cornflakes?
Any kind of cornflakes. I'll tell you what. Tweet me. Is it still called a tweet?
I don't know.
Tweet me cornflakes after this comes out. Let me know that somebody is hearing this stuff here.
X me cornflakes.
X me cornflakes. Anything, and we'll shout you out. The first person to do it will win absolutely nothing. We're not giving anything away, but we would love to hear
a high five.
Digital high five. I love it.
Yes,
that's what we'll do. Next week, we are going to be coming back to the stars and gaming therein. We're going to talk about Starfield. We did our initial review. Well, not initial review, but just initial impression. Mm-hmm. We are now into the thick of it, and we're going to give you kind of our feelings now that we're kind of completely immersed in. What have we learned? Do we still love it? Is it still that game that you want to play?
Your kids are too old, but if I go into the thick of it, some of you listeners know exactly what's going on, but we'll leave it at that.
Absolutely.